Coulter, but her book on treason shows that what constitutionalists have been saying for decades, McCarthy was right. McCarthy didn't ruin anybody's life who wasn't really a communist. And if he didn't think he could prove in a court of law that somebody was a communist, he didn't reveal their names, and went to his grave refusing to reveal their names. But the reason why so many Americans in that era became communists was because they thought those are the two choices, communism or national socialism. Okay, so you're either a Nazi or a fascist, or you're a communist. And see, what that is that is moving the left and the right down to here. It's all different shades of black, and it's acting like the constitutional republic isn't even an option. I would argue that right now the biggest difference between the Republican Party in America and the Democratic Party in America is that the Democratic Party is more of the communist socialist type, where the Democratic Party has no allegiance to America and wants big government to solve our problems, even big global government to solve our problems. So that's more of the Karl Marx type, where he had no allegiance to any particular nation. Whereas the leaders of the Republican Party, the neoconservatives, they are proud to be American, but it's a national socialism, like Hitler. He was proud of Germany, and he believed Germany was the greatest nation on earth, but he still wanted big government in Germany, and he wanted the big German government to take over the world. So basically, the debate between the left and the right, that's why the left, they call Republicans Nazis and fascists, because that's really what the Republican Party is becoming. At the same time, these other guys are communists. So do we want big, all-powerful government that likes saying the Pledge of Allegiance? Or do we want big, all-powerful government that would rather bow before the United Nations? Either way, you get big government and you get internationalism, you get globalism. I think the best thing that we can do is to start complaining about both parties to the point where maybe somebody will listen. Evangelicals have done is we've seen the Republican Party slide towards the same direction as the Democrats, and we've looked the other way. And we said, my party, right or wrong. No, we've got to be the conscience of our leaders and call them into account, and we're not doing that very well. By the way, the early church, so Gramscian communism, you evolve, you gain control of churches, education, the media, art. That's what's going on in America today. But the early church was not communistic. Acts 2, 41 to 45, where they were sharing what they had with others. Sharing is not the same as the abolition of private property. There's no government taking from the rich and giving to the poor. It's compassionate capitalism. God instituted human government to protect men, their God-given rights, and property. God did not institute human government to enslave mankind. So anybody who thinks Christianity promotes communism, I don't know where they're coming from, but I'd like to hear what their views on Jesus are, because hopefully they got that right. But they certainly don't have the biblical view of government and morality right. You want to see the best job of understanding the biblical view of government and morality? Read the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution of the United States of America. And I really wish some of our government leaders would read those two documents right now. Under optimistic atheism, we had Marxism and secular humanism. Modernism is almost identical with secular humanism. It was this optimistic feeling that through reason alone, now that we've unchained ourselves from God, through reason alone, we could find all truth and solve all our problems through human reason and through technology, okay? So that's the optimistic side. Now modernism is going to fail dismally, and that's going to lead to postmodernism. We'll talk about that later. Modernism, through human reason and technology, we're going to solve all our problems and find all truth. That didn't quite work. But some saw it wasn't going to work earlier on. Some saw we shouldn't even we need to question whether we should try that. They were pessimistic atheists, and that was what is called nihilism. Okay? So if we turn to that page on nihilism, pull that page on nihilism, and turn to the next page. I have Friedrich Nietzsche's. Yeah, I'm going to talk about Nietzsche first, because that's going to lead right into nihilism. And you'll see the page that says the gay science. Gay meant something different back then. And it's Nietzsche's madman parable. Now, let me read through this. And you'll see a lot about what nihilism is about, and a lot about Friedrich Nietzsche, where he was coming from. And he was an atheist before his time, a man before his time. He knew he was before his time. Anyway, he says this in his madman, the madman parable. Have you not heard of that madman who lit a lantern in the bright morning hours, ran to the marketplace, and cried incessantly, "I seek God! I seek God!" As many of those who do not believe in God were standing around just then, he provoked much laughter. Keep in mind, he's talking to atheists. He's not talking to Christians here. His message for Christians comes later on. So Nietzsche, most of his objections were to other atheists. Okay? Well, they started laughing because he said, "I seek God." "Why? Did he get lost?" said one. "Did he lose his way like a child?" said another. "Or is he hiding? Is he afraid of us? Has he gone on a voyage or emigrated?" Thus they yelled and laughed. The madman jumped into their midst and pierced them with his glances. And keep in mind, Nietzsche is the madman. Not only did he die mad, it's almost a self-fulfilling prophecy, but he's the man who was came before his time. It's the bright morning hours, and he lit his lantern when the night hasn't even come yet. He's a man before his time, okay? Then here's what the madman said. "Whither is God?" he cried. "I shall tell you, we have killed him, you and I. All of us are his murderers." So he's saying, we atheists killed God. Christianity used to be the dominant worldview of Western civilization, and now we killed him. We proved he didn't exist, thought Nietzsche, and so we are his murderers. But how have we done this? How are we able to drink up the sea? Who gave us the sponge to wipe away the entire horizon? What do we do when we unchain this earth from its sun? See, he's saying, by killing God, we unchain the earth from its sun. Whither is it moving now? Whither are we moving now? Away from all suns? Are we not plunging continually backward, sideward, forward, in all directions? Is there any up or down left? Are we not straying as through an infinite nothing? Do we not feel the breath of empty space? Has it not become colder? Is not night and more night coming on all the while? Must not lanterns be lit in the morning? So he's saying, we need to light lanterns in the morning. Why would you light them in the morning? He says, we need more people like myself who are madmen, who are crazy enough to be men ahead of their time, realizing the consequences of a world without God. See, what Nietzsche is saying is, before my atheist friends threw God off the bridge, they went through his pockets. They said, absolute truth, we need that. Absolute morality, we need that. Can't live without that. Meaning in life, we need that. Value to human life. Oh, sanctity to human life, we need that. Okay, now let's push him off. Nietzsche's saying, you had no right to do that. You push God off, traditional morality, absolute truth, meaning in life, all that is gone. See, the atheists of his day were saying, there is no God, God is dead, now it's business as usual. Nietzsche was telling his own atheist colleagues, God is dead, now everything changes. Nothing remains the same. He says, is there any up or down left? Are we not straying as through an infinite nothing? Do we not feel the breath of empty space? Has it not become colder? Is not night and more night coming on all the while? Must not lanterns be lit in the morning? Do we not hear anything yet of the noise of the grave diggers who are burying God? Do we not smell anything yet of God's decomposition? God's too decomposed. God is dead. God remains dead, and we have killed him. How shall we, the murderers of all murderers, comfort ourselves. What was holiest and most powerful of all that the world has yet owned has bled to death under our knives. Who will wipe this blood off us? What water is there for us to clean ourselves? What festivals of atonement, what sacred games shall we have to invent? CC's basically saying is, we've got to replace the void filled by the death of God. We may even need to become our own gods and make our own religions or something to give us some kind of feeling of meaning in life. But if Christianity is dead, everything changes. We don't even have a reason to live anymore. Is not the greatness of this deed too great for us? Must not we ourselves become gods simply to seem worthy of it? There has never been a greater deed, and whoever will be born after us for the sake of this deed, he will be part of a higher history than all history hitherto. See, now, Nietzsche predicted the 20th century would become an atheist world come of age. It would be the bloodiest century in the history of mankind, and he was right. But he thought out of this would produce the Superman. We'll talk about that a little bit later. Here the madman fell silent and looked again at his listeners. They too were silent and stared at him in astonishment. At last he threw his lantern on the ground and it broke and went out. I come too early, he said then. My time has not come yet. This tremendous event is still on its way, still wandering. It has not reached the ears of man. See, in other words, they quote-unquote knew that God no longer exists, but they weren't willing to accept the consequences of a world without God. That event was still light years ahead, or still years ahead. Lightning and thunder require time. The light of the stars requires time. Deeds require time even after they are done, before they can be seen and heard. This deed is still more distant from them than the most distant stars, and yet they have done it themselves. They're saying they killed God, but they don't even see that now everything has to change. Now, here's his message. That's his message to atheists. Here's his message to the church. It has been related further that on that same day, the madman entered diverse churches and there sang his Requiem Aeternum Deo, basically the death of God. Let out and called to account, he is said to have replied each time, what are these churches now if they are not the tombs and sepulchres of God? So Nietzsche didn't have a lot to complain about Christianity, about the church, because he said, you guys are irrelevant. Why should I waste my breath and ink and paper on churches to built in the honor of a dead God? Your churches are tombs of a dead God. You're irrelevant. You don't even deserve the time of day. Now, he spent the bulk of his time arguing with his atheist friends to realize, look, God is dead. It's not business as usual. God is dead. You're happy. You should be like me. God is dead. I am terrified. If God is dead, no God, no truth, no morality, no meaning in life, no worth for man, that's scary. And so what Nietzsche, that's nihilism, okay? What Nietzsche then proposed, he's often called a nihilist, but he's also often called a postmodernist or an existentialist, the father of modern existentialism. He's probably the most consistent atheist to ever live, but even he couldn't live consistent with his atheism. Even he was searching for some kind of escape from a meaningless existence. He basically came up with his own myth. Now, if you turn to the next page on Friedrich Nietzsche, I'll talk about him real quick, and then we'll get into nihilism. Friedrich Nietzsche lived from 1844 to 1900. He proclaimed God is dead. He wasn't the one who coined the phrase, but he shouted it louder and longer and more times than anybody else. He believed that God is created through man's primitive imagination and wishful thinking, Feuerbach, and that the human race had now intellectually matured to the point where we now see that God is non-existent, that we can explain everything through human reason and natural causes. Still, even atheist intellectuals were living inconsistently with their worldview. For if God is dead, then traditional moral values have died with them. But this should not be the case. So Nietzsche redefined the good. He said, no. The good, since there's no such thing as right and wrong, and there's no such thing as absolute truth, then man's will to power is all that's left. There was an ancient Greek philosopher who said the same thing. When the skeptics came on and said there's no such thing as right and wrong, Thrasymachus said, then might is right. If I'm the strongest guy in the room, I rule. But then if three or four guys get together and say we can overpower him, now they have the might on their side. They're in charge. So then I end up looking around the room and I find a big stick. And now I can start whomping on these guys, and now I'm in charge again. But these other guys find a knife in the room. Now they're in charge. But might is right. Whoever's the strongest, right is whatever they want it to be. It's not much different from Nietzsche's the will to power. Okay? He rejected the soft values of Christianity, like love and grace, gentleness, and he recommended hard values. He glorified war as an example of that. See, what Nietzsche's saying is the old myth has died, so now we need a new myth. And here's the myth I'm proposing. I don't believe in absolute truth, but here's the myth that I want people to treat as if it were absolute truth. So he rejected the soft values of Christianity, recommended hard values, and called for a group of supermen to arise with the courage to create their own values. Now, he was opposed to the Nazis, because he didn't believe that the supermen would be defined by their bloodlines. So he was against Aryan supremacy. His idea of the supermen were a bunch of intellectuals getting the same ideas at the same time. So Nietzsche viewed himself as a superman. Not because he was German, but because he was quote-unquote brilliant. Okay? So he called for a group of supermen to arise with the courage to create their own values. And he predicted that the atheists of the 20th century would realize the consequences of a world without God. Without God, there are no moral absolutes. Man is free to play God and create his own values. And that's why Nietzsche predicted the 20th century would therefore be the bloodiest century in the history of mankind. Now, Nietzsche died insane. Hitler and the Nazis turned to his works. His sister, as he was going crazy, and then after he died, they would go to her and she would change some of his writings or whatever. But they returned to Nietzsche's works for the intellectual justification for their barbaric acts. But, you know, and Nietzsche complained. He did not like the Nazis. But, I mean, it's like, look, you might think you're the Superman, but you're going to die insane and alone, Nietzsche. You know, you said God is dead, but God is alive and well. Nietzsche's the one who's dead, okay? You don't like what the Nazis and their master race are all about, but the fact of the matter is, once you say there are no absolute moral laws, through Hitler's will to power and the Nazis' will to power, if you don't like their hard values, they're just a little bit too hard for you, Mr. Nietzsche, what are you going to do about it? Going to do exactly what he did. He died insane and alone. He didn't do anything about it. But the fact of the matter is, once you throw God out the window, you've got no way, no consistent way to stand up and fight against an Adolf Hitler. So many Americans were confused into thinking the communists were good guys because they opposed Hitler. No, they weren't good guys. They wanted the same kind of tyranny that Hitler wanted. But the communists didn't want to share a piece of the cake. They didn't want to divide the pie between them and the Nazis. And the Nazis certainly weren't going to share power. But it's just two different thugs battling for the same victim. So whatever case, back to that page on nihilism, it's more a feeling, a pessimistic feeling than a philosophy. It's pessimistic atheism. They believe that only matter exists. Well, naturalism leads to nihilism. Everything is either controlled or totally arbitrary. Nothing makes sense. Man is mere molecules in motion. The universe is a uniformity of cause and effect in a closed system. No miracles, no free will, only natural causes. You don't choose. Timothy McVeigh didn't choose to blow up the Oklahoma City building. He just had a chemical reaction in his brain that made him do it. Because there are no real non-material things, like ideas and choices. Okay? It's like when I debated Dan Barker. He kept using Timothy McVeigh as an example of evil in the world, the atheist Dan Barker. And so I said, how much does an idea weigh? Could you pick it up or throw it? Or, and he said, no, you can't. An idea doesn't weigh anything. I say, are you saying an idea, a choice is not a... Oh, no. Tell you about it. I asked him, how much does an idea weigh? And he said, you can weigh an idea. And I thought, okay, good, he's a consistent materialist. If they're not a consistent materialist, you could still zero in on them. If they say that you can't weigh an idea and all this other stuff, and then they say, well, you just said the only matter exists, so you don't believe in ideas, you don't believe in truth. But with Dan Barker, he said, no, you can weigh an idea. I said, are you saying an idea is nothing but a chemical reaction that occurs inside somebody's brain? He said, yeah. And I said, well, then why are you condemning Timothy McVeigh when he was just responding to a brain squirt? And the whole audience laughed and all. But I'm making a point there. A Christian can call Timothy McVeigh's choice to kill innocent people evil because he made his non-material soul made the non-material choice to do evil. And then that set things moving in his brain. But if materialism is true, we don't make choices. We have no non-material soul. We have no non-material choices. Choosing to kill an innocent person is no different from catching a cold. It's just biological things that happen in the physical realm. Whatever the case, man is not free. His genetic makeup and his environment control him. Man is a machine. He has no soul. There's no self. So Nietzsche said, you know, if God is dead, then truth is dead, morality is dead, meaning is dead. But we can make a myth and produce the Superman. No, I'm sorry, Mr. Nietzsche. This is what I argue for with the death of Western civilization. In my book, God, Government, and the Road to Tyranny. If God is dead, and truth is dead, morality is dead, meaning is dead, then man is dead too. And that's what C.S. Lewis said in his The Abolition of Man. That's what Francis Schaeffer said by his phrase, The Death of Man, in his book, Back to Freedom and Human Dignity, his response to B.F. Skinner. B.F. Skinner, his work, Beyond Freedom and Human Dignity, he said, man is controlled by his genes and his environment. B.F. Skinner argued there is no freedom. By the way, the United Nations, their curriculum, global curriculum, which we see through Goals 2000, America 2000, each state has its own name for it, but it was all set up by B.F. Skinner. And he believed that there's no God, man's controlled by his genes and his environment. Therefore, says B.F. Skinner, me and my friends, the intellectual elite, need to control the environment and need to genetically manipulate human beings so that we could bring about the greatest good for the greatest number, bring about the greatest possible world. Several problems there. Number one, there is no such thing as the greatest possible world if there's no such thing as good and evil. Skinner believes there's no such thing as good and evil, but we can still make the world a better place to live. Where do you get that from? Whatever is, period, if Skinner is right. Number two, what makes him and his colleague friends the intellectual elite who know what's best for us? Because they're also, if Skinner is correct, they're also controlled by their genes and their environment. They're just as controlled as everybody else. So that's what Francis Schaeffer pointed out in his Back to Freedom and Human Dignity. Jacques Monod, he argued that random chance causes all things. These are all nihilistic views, okay? Man can never be sure he knows anything if nihilism is true. Man could never be sure anything is real. Whatever is ought to be, because there's really there's no absolute moral laws. You can't say the world ought to be better because there's no right and wrong. And there's no genuine meaning to life. Life is absurd. Now, we can respond to nihilism by saying, well then, life is just not livable. You can't live consistently with the view that life has no meaning. Which is why a few honest atheists who saw that the consistent consequence of atheism is nihilism. Nietzsche saw that. That's why I say he was the most consistent atheist who ever lived. Now, he couldn't stay with that. He wanted to existentially leap out of that and make a myth. But atheism leads to nihilism. Well, it's not livable. And it's not even thinkable. We have to think in terms of truth and falsehood. If you think, well, that chair is green, that's not the same as thinking that chair is red. So you think in terms, when you say in your mind that chair is green, you're saying that that chair is not any color that is non-green. Okay? So you're thinking in terms of truth and falsehood. Even when you try to deny absolute truth, you have to assume absolute truth in order to make the denial, because you believe the statement there is no absolute truth is true. Okay? So we can't escape antithesis, what Francis Schaeffer called antithesis. We can't escape the idea of absolute truth, even in our thinking, in our communication, and in our living. Nihilism leads to the death of truth, morality, meaning, and art. And as C.S. Lewis and Francis Schaeffer argued, it leads as well to the death of man. And because of that, to escape the death of man, people are actually evacuating atheism and turning more towards New Age pantheism. But I still argue that leads to the death of man. The New Agers like Barbara Marx Hubbard, who want to exterminate one out of four people on the planet Earth, in order to bring about the New Age of peace and enlightenment. Okay, now we need to talk about existentialism. If you turn to that page in existentialism, if we can get through existentialism, then the next lecture we can do postmodernism, and then after that we can start refuting atheism. Existentialism, let me read a quote from one of Peter Kreeve's books on the three philosophies of life. Peter Kreeve is a Roman Catholic philosopher, but he quotes from Jean-Paul Sartre in an essay called Existentialism and Humanism. And you can see it down there. It's what I've like kind of circled. And Sartre says this in Existentialism and Humanism: God does not exist, and we have to face all the consequences of this. The existentialist is strongly opposed to a certain kind of secular ethics which would like to abolish God with the least possible expense. The existentialist, on the contrary, thinks it very distressing that God does not exist, like Nietzsche and the madman, because all possibility of finding values in a heaven of ideas disappears with him. There can be no a priori good, since there is no infinite and perfect consciousness to think it. Nowhere is it written that the good exists, that we must be honest, and that we must not lie, because the fact is, we are on a plane where there are only men. Dostoevsky said, if God didn't exist, everything would be permissible. That is the very starting point of existentialism. Of course, Dostoevsky was a Christian. He was arguing that, look, if God doesn't exist, everything is permissible, but some things really are evil, therefore God exists. Nietzsche just takes it, well, God doesn't exist, so everything is permissible. That is the very starting point of existentialism. As a result, man is forlorn, because neither within him nor without does he find anything to cling to. If God does not exist, we find no values or commands to turn to which legitimize our conduct. And so that's the starting point of existentialism. So let's talk a little bit about existentialism. It's a response to the pessimistic atheism of nihilism. It says there's no God, no truth, no morality, no meaning, but man desperately needs meaning in life. And so French existentialists like Jean-Paul Sartre and Albert Camus come on the scene, and they say only for human beings existence precedes essence. Now what that means is essence is what you are, existence is that you are. Essence defines you. Existence says whether or not that defined thing really does exist. Okay? Most philosophers throughout the ages have been essentialist. They would say that essence precedes existence. In other words, you're defined as a human being, so your life, you will exist within certain parameters. Okay? Like, you can't stand on a house, flap your arms, and fly like a bird can, okay? So you come into life with an essence. You come into life defined already. The existentialists say, no, we come into life a blank check. We have no God-defined nature. We come into life a blank check, and we are free, totally free, to define our existence, define our essence, who we are through our existence, through what we do, what we experience. Okay? And so only for human beings, existence precedes essence. People make themselves what they are. See, Sartre would argue, if God exists, man is not free. See, the existentialist views freedom as absolute, okay? And if God exists, man's not absolutely free. Therefore, but if man is free, there is no God. Well, the existentialist says, well, man is free. We are not defined. We reject God, we're not defined, so man is free, and God doesn't exist. So humans are totally free regarding our nature and destiny. We do not come into existence with our natures already defined. We are totally free to define ourselves. The objective world, and because of this, then the objective world, no God, appears to be totally absurd. Now, Camus said, well, why not suicide? That's the only question philosophy has to answer. Well, Sartre is more optimistic and less nihilistic than Camus, and Sartre says we must revolt against this objective world that's totally absurd. We must revolt by an act of our will and create value and meaning for our lives. We must actualize ourselves through a non-rational leap of faith. See, Sartre gives the example. He says, it makes no difference whether you help the elderly lady who's got groceries, whether you help her cross the street, or you mug her and take her groceries. The important thing is you've actualized yourself. You gave meaning to your life. Now, I feel very sorry for the elderly lady. So it's like life has no God, no truth, no morality, no meaning in life. We desperately need meaning. Take an act of the will, a leap of blind faith, and just create meaning for your life. You know? Response, only the God of the Bible can rescue us from meaningless existence. A non-rational blind leap of faith will not do. There is good evidence for God, absolute truth, absolute moral laws of biblical Christianity. So therefore, we don't need to join Jean-Paul Sartre as he leaps into the non-rational realm. Okay, in the next lecture, we'll talk about postmodernism, and then we'll try to get into some of the evidences for Christianity and the evidence for God and the evidence against atheism.